27. After he had stopped by Vern Lindblom's domain and had picked up the alpha wave pattern of Stanton Brose's brain once more from the Type 6 senior Letty, Joseph Adams, with his retinue of personal Lettys and his bodyguard from the Foot Organization, flew aimlessly, not toward New York, not in any particular direction. He got away with that for just a few minutes, and then one of the four footmen leaned toward him from the seat behind and said, distinctly and grimly, "Go to the agency in New York, without delay, or I'll kill you with my laser beam." He thereupon placed the cold, round muzzle of his laser pistol to the back of Joseph Adams' head. "Some bodyguard," Adams said bitterly. "You have an appointment with Mr. Foote and Mr. Lantano at your office," the footman commando said. "Please keep it." On Joseph Adams' person, in the form of a dead man's throttle strapped to his left wrist, he possessed, had rigged this up as a result of Vern Lindblom's death, an emergency signaling device that connected him by microwave with his retinue of Lettys, now squeezed in on each side of him here in this oversized flapple. He wondered if he were to trigger the signal, which would come first. Would the footman commando, an expert, kill him, or would his Lettys, who were war veterans, take out the four footmen? An interesting question. And on it, nothing more or less than his life depended. But why not fly onto the agency? What held him back? I'm afraid of Lantano, he realized. Lantano knew too much, had too many pieces of detailed knowledge about Vern Lindblom's death at his disposal. But I'm afraid, he realized, of Stanton Brose, too. I'm afraid of both of them. But of the two, Brose is the known fear and Lantano the unknown. So for me, Lantano creates an even greater sense of that grisly, all-encompassing, devouring inner and outer fog that sweeps life away from me. And God knows Brose has been bad enough. His special project was the epitome of wickedness and cynicism, plus Brose's own unique blend of senile cunning, of drooling, glint-eyed, almost childishly mischievous doing of wrong and enjoying it. And Brose, he realized, will get worse. As that brain rots more and more, as those microscopic strictures of minute blood vessels continue to occur, as bit after bit of brain tissue clogged, deprived of oxygen and nutrition, perishes, and leaves the remnants just that more revolting, that much less to be depended on, ethically and pragmatically. The next 20 years, under the decaying rule of Stanton Brose, would be even more profoundly ghastly as the central guiding organ penetrated deeper, ceaselessly deeper, and lured the world along with it. And he, all the Antsmen, all of them would be jerked and dangled by the convulsive twitches on the deranged master string. As Brose's brain degenerated, they, as extensions of Brose, will all of them degenerate in resonance. God, what a prospect. The force which Lantano had unique control over, time, was the force which was corrupting the organic tissue of Stanton Brose. Hence, with one stroke, the release of one high-velocity, homeostatic, alpha-wave, tropic cyanide dart, that corrupting force would he abolish from their lives. And wasn't that the whole rational reason for this flight to New York, to his office, where Lantano and Foote waited? But Joseph Adams' body, unconvinced, threw its metabolic secretions of fear through and through his sympathetic nervous system, struggling for relief. In other words, he realized, for escape. I want to get away. And Foote, too, he realized acutely, if that look on his face meant anything, felt something of this, only not as strongly as I'm feeling it now, because if he did, he would not be in New York. He'd be out of here long ago. Webster Foote would know how. And he realized, I don't. I'm not equipped, as he is, for this. Okay, Adams said to the footman commando behind him, who held the laser pistol to Adams' head. I was disoriented for a minute. Now I'm all right. He turned the flapple, then onward toward New York. Behind him, the footman commando withdrew the laser pistol, restored it to its shoulder holster as the flapple streaked northwest. At his left wrist, Joseph Adams released the dead man's throttle signaling device. The microwave impulse to his Lettys automatically and instantly became perceptible, although his own sense receptors picked up nothing, nor did those of the four footmen. As Adams stared fixedly at the controls before him, his leadys, in a brief skirmish, almost gruesomely silent, killed the four footmen. The noise, after a time so short that Adams could not really believe or accept that the act had been accomplished, came to its termination. A rear door of the flapple was opened, and with much straining and groaning and clanking, the leadys dumped out the bodies of the four footmen, out into the emptiness of space and the remoteness of a night which, it seemed to Adams, had begun, but would never end. Adams said, "I just couldn't go to New York." He shut his eyes. "In nomine domini," he thought. Four men dead. Awful. And he would always wear, carry with him, the mark. He had ordered it. And without using his own hands, which made it just that much worse. "But they put that gun to my head," he realized, "and in my fear I went insane. They threatened to kill me if I didn't go to New York. And since I can't do that..." God help each of us, he thought. "That to live we have to destroy. This price has to be paid, this bad bargain. Four lives for one." Anyhow, it was done. And so he turned the flapple toward the south. It moved southeast now, toward the Carolinas, instead of toward New York, which he would never see again. It took him hours to sight the illuminated blotch in the darkness below, which was the scene of the diggings. The flapple, at Adams' instruction, began its spiral down, toward the spot where Nicholas St. James, the ex-tanker, dug with the assistance of David Lantano's leadys, seeking the possible buried U.S. Army pre-war medical storehouse in the Artiforgs, if they existed, and if this was the correct spot, somewhere below the surface. Once landed, Adams made his way toward the diggings. Off to one side, the ex-tanker Nicholas St. James sat among cartons and boxes, and Adams realized that the location had proved correct. The U.S. Army dump had been located. Already pre-war supplies were being recovered. It was, in Yanceman Argot, Christmas morning. Glancing up at the sight of the first leady, Nicholas peered. "Who is it?" he said. Simultaneously, Lantano's leadys ceased their toiling. Without command, they moved toward Nicholas to protect him. Their manual extensors dropped so as to make contact with the weapons which they, at their midsections, carried. It was done swiftly, smoothly, and, of course, at once. Adams gave an order, and his own leadys moved about him, too, in an equally defensive pattern. The two men now were separated, each by his own leadys. Only leady faced leady. Neither man could see the other. "St. James, remember me? Joe Adams. I met you at Dave Lantano's domain. I've come by to see what luck you had in getting your artiforg." "Real luck," Nicholas yelled back. "But what's this deploying of these leadys for? Who's fighting who and what for?" "I don't want to fight," Adams said. "Can I retire my leadys? Will you do the same with yours and give me your word there won't be any hostile interaction?" Sounding genuinely puzzled, Nicholas said, "But there's no war. Blair said so, and I saw the domains. Why should there be any hostile interaction between you and me?" "No reasons." Adams signaled his leadys. They withdrew reluctantly, because after all each of them was a veteran of the war, the true war which had been fought 13 years ago. Alone, as a single human, Adams approached the ex-tanker. "Did you find a particular artifor you need?" Excitedly, like an overjoyed, enthralled small boy, Nicholas said, "Yes, three artiforgs, a heart, a kidney. I found it, an artiforg pancreas, still in its original protective carton. It's sealed in an aluminum drum." He displayed it proudly. "Plastic dipped to keep out air. Undoubtedly, it's as good as when it was first made. This container was built to protect its contents for, look, it says right here, for 50 years. "Then you did it," Adams said. "You got it," he thought to himself. "What you emerged into the light of day for. Your journey is over." "You lucky guy," he thought. "If only it were that simple for me. If what I needed, lacked, required so that I might live, could be held in the hand, inspected, its ink markings read, picked up and manually gripped, some object, material and hard, and my fears equally concrete. Limited, as has been your case, to the fear of not finding one specific, clearly defined wartime construct, and that construct now found and possessed, as much as we can in this life ever possess anything, really retain and keep it. And look what I have lost," he thought. my domain, my job. I'm going to give up the surface of Earth in order not to follow Vern Lindblom, because, he said to himself, I know it was David Lantano who did it. I knew that the moment Lantano admitted that he had the weapon assembly in his possession, the components that make up the killing agent known to us all, the high velocity, or as in Vern's case, low velocity, cyanide-tipped homeostatic dart, and not rusty but in working order, as was the one which reached Vern Lindblom's heart. Mint condition, as Lantano had said, derived directly from the war years, from 13 years ago, by means of Lantano's time-travel equipment, and to be set up in my office to kill Bros exactly as Vern was killed. Admittedly, it will be instantaneous and painless, but it is still murder, as was mine of the four footmen commandos. But this is how we stand, and I am leaving, descending if I can. You're going back to your tank? He asked Nicholas. Right away. The shorter a time old Sousa is in freeze, the better. There's always the chance of some brain decay. I'm going to leave Lantano's leadys here to keep on digging, get the rest up. I guess Lantano and Foot can split it, or anyhow come to an agreement. They seem, Adams said, able to agree. Foot supplied the map, Lantano the leadys, and the digging equipment. They'll find some way to divide the trove. What's amazing, he thought, is that you are getting your pancreas without conditions. They've asked nothing in exchange. So they're not bad men, not any typical ordinary sense. Together, Foot and Lantano, with dignity and caritas, arrange for you to obtain what Bros has deprived you, and everyone else on the planet, of what he has hoarded for himself, Bros, who was absolutely without caritas. I thought you were supposed to meet them in New York, Nicholas said to Adams. They'll make out. From Megavac 6B, they could get Stanton Bros's alpha wave pattern. They would think of that sooner or later, when he did not show. In fact, probably already had. And if they could not mount the dart weapon in his office, if they, using Foot's tools and skills, could not pick the intricate door lock, could not enter, they could and would find a serviceable place in the corridor, the sole passage to the office, the route which Stanton Bros would have to follow to reach the office. He knew, intuited on a very deep, absolute level, that together Foot and Lantano would manage somehow to work it out. They would never forget, however, that he had failed to show. If they did not get Bros, then the old, half-senile mass of fat would no doubt destroy them, and possibly Adams as well. If they did, well, probably at some convenient later date when Foot and Lantano, especially Lantano, had gained power, replaced Bros, they would track him down. There would be plenty of time for vengeance. Ultimately, in either case, it would come. Whatever the outcome of the weapon planting which at this moment was taking place in the agency hallway or office at 580 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Did you ever tell Lantano, he asked Nicholas, which ant tank you came from? Hell no, Nicholas said. I have to protect the people down there. I've got a wife and a kid brother down in... He broke off. I told that ex-tanker in the Cheyenne Ruins, though, that Jack Blair... He shrugged stoically. But Blair probably won't remember. They all there in those ruins seemed a little scrambled wit-wise. Soberly, he said to Adams then, I'm the elected president of the tank. I carry a terrific responsibility. That's why it was me they sent up to the surface to get this artiforge. He turned, started toward the parked flapple. Adams said, Can I go along? Nicholas looked startled, but principally preoccupied. It was the artiforge that concerned him, the object and the task of getting it back intact with him to his tank. You want to go below with me, you mean? Why? I want to hide, Adams said simply. After a pause, Nicholas said, You mean Lantano? I mean, Adams said, everyone. They got my one and only living friend. They'll get me. But if I'm down below, and they won't know which tank, maybe, unless your Polcom happens to report... My Polcom, Nicholas said tonelessly, came from the surface, from Estes Park, after the end of the war. He knew. So there isn't going to be any Polcom at the Tom Mix. Anyhow, not that one. Another death, Adams realized. And also necessary. like each of the others, like mine will be eventually. And yet, this rule, this necessity, has always existed, and for everything that has ever lived. What we've got here is only a special case, only a hastening of the natural organic process. Sure, Nicholas said. You're welcome. I know from what you said at Lantano's domain, you're as unhappy as hell up here. Hell, Adams echoed. Yes, it was, literally, the burning place of the dead, the place of fires, the flicker of red, the charred background, the pits, summed up and summoned up by the war of 13 years ago. He had been living it, first in the scorching blaze of the war itself, then in its other, later form, the cool, approaching mist, and then once more in its more awful, searing aspect, igniting him, cramming him with this time a new, entirely new agony, from the moment he had learned of Vern Lindblom's death. You'll have to get used to the overcrowding down there, Nicholas said, as the two of them made their way toward the parked Flapple. Adam's Letty's trailed behind. And you can't bring them, he gestured at the retinue of Letty's, with you. You'll have to come alone. There's no room. In fact, in our cubby, we share the bathroom. Good enough, Adams said. He would agree to anything, give up his last Letty, be stripped of that too, and gladly. And he would be more than willing to share the bathroom with those inhabiting the adjoining room. He would not endure it, he would thrive. Because it would make up for the loneliness of his years as dominus of his vast, silent, forest-surrounded domain, with its ocean fog, the gruesome, empty Pacific fog. The tankers would not understand that. Maybe they would even marvel at his ability to adjust to such crowded conditions, after having been a functionary, as he would tell them, have to tell them, of the Estes Park West Dem government. Like the Polcoms, he had descended into their tank to share their deprivations with them. Or so they would think. Ironic.